Well, hello there, everyone. I'm Pat, and it's truly lovely that you're here with us today.
And hi, I'm Jesse. We're so glad you're settling in for what we hope will feel like a real conversation.
Definitely. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a really important and honestly, often quite challenging topic.
Yeah, we're talking about the lasting impact of narcissistic parenting, particularly focusing on sons.
It's a subject that, well, it touches so many lives, but it often stays hidden. You know, unspoken.
Absolutely. So our mission today is to explore what it really means to grow up in that kind of environment.
And how those early experiences, those profound ones, can shape adult life in ways you might not even realize.
We've gathered insights from, well, quite a few places, articles, research, and some really moving personal stories.
Our goal is to help you understand these invisible scars, as they're sometimes called.
But maybe even more importantly, we want to look at the pathways to healing, how to reclaim your identity and really define your own future.
Yeah, sort of like peeling back layers one by one to get a clearer picture. So maybe let's start at the beginning. What do we actually mean when we say narcissistic parenting?
Okay, yeah. At its core, it's about a parent who is fundamentally self-centered, you know, really focused on themselves.
Characterized by things like grandiosity.
That's a big one. Grandiosity, a real lack of empathy, that's key. And this almost insatiable need for admiration.
And how they view their children is crucial here, right?
Absolutely. It's often not as separate individuals with their own needs, but more like extensions of themselves.
Existing to serve the parents' needs, basically. Enhance their image.
Pretty much, yeah. And this is where it gets really different from, say, strict but fair parenting. People sometimes confuse the two.
Right. How is it different? Because that's a really important distinction.
It is. The core difference, and it's vital, is the intent. Strict parents, you know, they're usually acting out of love, protection.
They want their kid to succeed, even if they're tough.
Exactly. They might have consistent rules. Maybe they're open to some discussion. The goal is growth.
But with narcissistic parents, it's different.
Fundamentally different. The motivation isn't nurturing. The rules, the punishments, they're often tools.
Tools for what?
Tools to control, sometimes subtly, sometimes overtly, to abuse and to keep their children kind of enmeshed with their own lives.
So it actually hinders the child's independence?
Yeah, it often hinders their independent development, maybe not even consciously, but that's the effect.
Wow. Okay, so this creates a pretty toxic environment then.
Definitely. It's often emotionally unresponsive. Our sources show that these caregivers are often, well, incapable of giving that consistent, unconditional emotional support.
The kind kids really need to thrive.
Exactly. And validation. Forget about it, usually. Or if praise does come.
It's conditional.
Totally conditional. It's only there if the child's performance lines up with the parent's agenda, like makes the parent look good.
Brings them accolades or attention or something.
Right. And this just stifles the kid's own expression.
How so?
Well, children growing up in this might be shamed or punished or even rejected just for being themselves, for having their own thoughts or feelings.
It sounds like walking on eggshells constantly.
That's a really good way to put it, a constant tightrope walk.
So what does that do to a child long term? This constant tightrope walking, this emotional deprivation.
Yeah, this is where the impact gets really profound. It starts to erode their self-worth, their whole sense of identity.
How does that happen?
Well, children of narcissistic parents often internalize the abuse. They start to believe they're the problem.
That they're inherently unworthy or flawed.
Exactly. And it's not just, you know, low self-esteem like we normally think of it. It's deeper. It's this fragile sense of self.
Like they don't really know who they are outside of that parent's influence.
Precisely. And these persistent feelings of inadequacy, it often becomes this nagging inner voice.
The you're not good enough voice.
That's the one, constantly whispering. It makes healing so much about finding a self they maybe never even got to know.
Yeah, I remember reading this poignant example from a Reddit user. They shared how they were so hesitant to blame their father, only to realize much later that the self-blame itself was a symptom of the abuse.
Wow. That just shows how deep these patterns run, doesn't it?
It really does. And this kind of unpredictable upbringing, it must set the stage for other issues later on.
Oh, absolutely. Especially things like anxiety, depression, and emotional dysregulation.
Because the home environment feels unsafe.
Ah.
with those overreactions and outbursts.
Exactly. It's like living with constant emotional whiplash, you know? This really contributes to long-term struggles, chronic anxiety, depression.
And complex PTSD, if I've heard that term, CPTSD.
Yes, CPTSD. It comes from that prolonged, repeated trauma, especially in childhood. It often has a wider range of symptoms than, say, PTSD from a single event.
And I bet many people who went through this become hypersensitive to others' emotions.
Very much so. Constantly scanning the room, reading moods, trying to anticipate shifts.
That sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting. But it's a survival mechanism they learned, right? Having to constantly gauge the parents' mood to try and avoid conflict.
Okay, so it makes sense then that these deep psychological wounds would really impact relationships later on.
Hugely. Let's talk about those challenges. Forming healthy connections is tough.
Like with boundaries.
Boundaries are a big one. They often struggle to set healthy ones because they learn to always prioritize others' needs.
And they might feel responsible for their partner's happiness.
Yeah, which, as you can imagine, is just incredibly draining.
And trust. That must be hard.
Trust issues are rampant. There's often this deep-seated fear, you know, that a current partner will end up behaving like the narcissistic parent.
So love might feel temporary, okay. Conditional.
Exactly. Short-term and conditional.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it might be perceived because that's the model they had. If you only experience conditional love, how do you even recognize the real thing or trust it?
That makes sense. And is it true they might be drawn to unhealthy partners?
It's sadly common. There can be this unconscious pull towards unhealthy or even narcissistic partners. It's like subconsciously replicating the dynamic they know, even though it's dysfunctional.
Wow. We saw a Reddit story about that, didn't we? Someone whose mother's abuse over a relationship made them end it.
Yeah, and then the mother's behavior just instantly switched back. It's that control dynamic again.
And another person shared an act saying, "I hate everyone's family because I don't have one." That just hits hard, that void.
It really speaks to that deep void, yeah.
Yeah.
The lack of that healthy family connection.
This also seems connected to needing perfection, needing validation.
Definitely. Especially for sons, there's often this drive for impossible standards set by the parents, which leads to this relentless perfectionism.
Look, it's never enough feeling for the parents, but also for themselves.
Exactly. And alongside that, this intense, almost desperate need for validation, for recognition, even just tiny crumbs of approval.
Learn from a parent, maybe a father who is really stingy with praise.
Often, yes. You know, Franz Kafka's writings actually capture this so powerfully. He wrote about his father's judgment making him tremble and how he just longed for a little encouragement, a little friendliness, that basic human need for validation. It's so powerful. It can shape a whole life.
And behaviorally, does this manifest in other ways, like control issues?
Yeah, control issues and also people pleasing. They can seem like opposites, but they often stem from the same place.
How does the control part work?
Well, as a defense against that parental unpredictability, some sons develop this really strong desire for control in their own lives.
Like super planned schedules, rigid routines.
Exactly. But it's not about being power hungry. It's usually a desperate attempt to reclaim some sense of agency, some predictability that they never had as kids.
Okay. And the people pleasing.
That's the flip side. Many develop these excessive people pleasing tendencies. Constantly bending over backwards, suppressing their own needs and desires.
Because that was the survival strategy, to try and earn that conditional love.
Precisely. It's what they had to do to get by, to feel even remotely safe or accepted. They often become the fixers for everyone else.
Okay, let's maybe hone in specifically on the impacts on sons now and that unique father-son dynamic.
Right. There's a really significant concept here called father hunger.
Father hunger.
Yeah. It describes this deep, profound yearning a boy has for his father's nurturing presence, a presence that feels absent, either emotionally or physically or both.
And what happens when that need isn't met? Especially by the father figure.
Well, what's interesting is that when fathers don't help their sons develop a separate, authentic self, the sons can become enmeshed.
Enmeshed, meaning boundaries are blurred.
Exactly. Boundaries get really blurry, and the son struggles to differentiate his own thoughts and feelings from his parents. He doesn't know where they end and he begins.
And that unmet dependency.
Yeah.
You said it can lead to an internal vacuum.
Yes, an internal vacuum. And surprisingly, sometimes that vacuum gets filled by developing narcissistic traits themselves in adulthood.
Really? How does that work?
It's almost like a desperate coping mechanism for that unfulfilled need, a way to try and feel powerful or self-sufficient when they felt so powerless before.
Wow, that's complex.
Oh.
Which maybe leads into another complex idea you mentioned, the impotent king syndrome.
Yes. That's a powerful term, isn't it? And it speaks to those really deep, unconscious ways these early dynamics can play out.
Can you explain that a bit more? How does a psychological issue from childhood connect to something like secondary male impotence?
Sure. So in some cases, those unresolved issues with a narcissistic father figure can manifest physically in adulthood as secondary impotence. It's not just physical, though.
It's tied to something deeper psychologically.
Exactly. The theory suggests it's linked to an unconscious desire to stay in this kind of regressive, almost sexually immature state.
Why would someone want that?
It's unconscious, remember. But he might be projecting unresolved anger, maybe towards his mother, onto his female partners, blaming them for his inability to perform. And deep down, there might be this secret, hidden desire to recapture the powerlessness he felt growing up.
Because that's the familiar state, even though it was painful.
Exactly. It's a known, albeit painful, territory. It's incredibly complex stuff, really digging into psychodynamic.
These impacts are just so deep. And the personal stories really drive it home.
They really do. We heard from that Reddit user, the Vin Steven 1991.
Right. His account of his father was just raw. Verbally, emotionally, even physically abusive.
Using his son's dyslexia against him, calling him special ed boy, mocking his hobbies.
And those completely unrealistic academic expectations, threatening to disown him for not going to university.
And calling him a worthless failure when he dropped out. It's just brutal emotional violence.
And then there was Matt at UVA, whose father was always the hero of his own story.
Yeah, never showing real interest in his son's actual life, just making everything about himself.
Leading the son to feel worthless, unloved, rejected. These stories just highlight that profound lifelong damage.
Damage from a parent consistently failing to truly see their child, to nurture them.
So, okay, given all this heaviness, what about healing? What are the pathways forward?
That's the crucial part. And the first step, often the hardest, is acceptance and detaching from blame.
Really internalizing that the abuse was not your fault.
Absolutely vital. Children are never responsible for their parents' abusive actions, period.
And accepting the reality. Grieving the childhood you didn't get. That sounds hard, too.
It is hard. Accepting what happened, letting go of the hope that the parent will suddenly change. It's a grieving process, grieving what you didn't have.
Acknowledging that loss, even if it was the loss of something that was never there.
Exactly. And seeking professional help is usually strongly recommended.
Therapy.
Therapy can be incredible. A space to process the trauma, rebuild that self-worth, develop healthier coping mechanisms.
Our sources mentioned psychodynamic counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Especially maybe male therapists for male clients.
Yeah, that approach can be really effective for addressing what's called narcissistic vulnerability. Finding the right therapist fit is key.
And support groups.
Hugely beneficial. They provide a safe space, validation, community, hearing shared experiences.
Hmm.
It helps you feel so much less alone.
Realizing you're not the only one who went through this.
Exactly. That shared understanding is powerful.
Another critical piece seems to be boundaries.
Oh, absolutely essential. First, figuring out what your boundaries are. Then stating them. Directly, briefly, consistently.
And non-negotiably.
Non-negotiably. This isn't about being mean. It's about prioritizing your own well-being, your own sanity sometimes.
But expect pushback, right? Guilt tripping, maybe anger.
Definitely be prepared for pushback. And here's the key. Without consequences, boundaries are just suggestions.
So you have to enforce them.
You have to enforce them. Things like limiting contact, ending conversations when boundaries are crossed. It's not punishment. It's self-protection.
And sometimes that might mean low contact or even no contact.
Sometimes, yes. If boundaries are constantly violated and your mental health is really suffering, establishing low or no contact might be the healthiest choice you can make for yourself.
Okay, so acceptance, therapy, support, boundaries.
Yeah.
What else?
It's also about reclaiming yourself, building new, healthier patterns.
Like reconnecting with your own emotions.
Yes. Understanding them as messengers, not things to be afraid of, and learning to reparent yourself.
Reparent yourself. How does that work?
It means consciously giving yourself the love, the care, the validation that you didn't receive as a child, meeting your own needs as an adult.
And actively discovering who you really are, separate from all that past conditioning.
Exactly. What do you truly enjoy? What do you believe? What do you want from life? It's a journey of self-discovery.
And building a strong support network seems key too.
Fundamental. genuine relationships, what some people call a chosen family, people who truly see you and support you.
And by doing all this work, you're breaking the cycle.
Right. You are actively breaking the cycle of abuse, preventing that unconscious transmission of negative patterns to maybe your own kids or future generations.
That's powerful. And maybe the final thought on this, those scars.
Those scars are not a sign of weakness, not at all. They're proof of your incredible strength, your resilience.
Healing isn't linear, is it?
Not at all. It's ongoing. It can be messy. But every single step, even the small ones, even the backward ones sometimes, they all count. It's a process.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive, the main takeaway is
that while the impact of narcissistic parenting is undeniably profound, healing is absolutely possible. You are not defined by your past.
You really do have the power to understand these experiences, to reclaim your identity.
And to build a life based on your own values, your authentic self, not living in the shadow of the past.
Yeah. So if you found value in our conversation today, if something resonated or helped you feel seen,
we would be so grateful if you'd consider subscribing, maybe liking this, and sharing it with someone who you think might need to hear it.
And please do leave us a comment. We genuinely love to hear your thoughts. Be a part of this conversation with you.
Yeah, your stories, your insights, they really matter to us.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. We really appreciate you spending this time with us.
Until next time, take really good care of yourselves. We hope you'll come back and join us again very soon.